Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, those who have computers, don't look at them for a minute. I want to know, what are the five steps of a formal syllogism of Hanuman? What's the first step? Which means? Okay. Usually involves what's called a paksha, or location. You say that in this situation, in this place, in this time, such and such is the fact. A time or a place, or a time and a place. Paksha is the location in time and space. And there's something about that location. Like, there is fire here. Here in this place now, there is fire. We're not talking about this place a year ago. We're not talking about the other mountain. We're talking about this one over here now. So that's identifying the location. And then you say there's fire here. Yes?
If someone doesn't stay in the park.
Well, you just say there is fire. Of course there's fire somewhere. Yes, on that grounds that the paksha is not defined, yes, it's a poorly formed argument and should be dismissed. It has to be specific. It has to be a specific time and place. Unless it's a universal statement. You're going to prove something that's true all the time, everywhere, okay. But if it's only true in a certain time and place, you should specify. Okay, what's the second step without looking at your computers? Like what? What do you mean by general principle? No, that's specific. That's specific. Well, it's just called Hetu. Give you a reason. Why do you say there's fire? Because there's smoke.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, but you say it more generally. You just say there's smoke. The fourth step is to say there's smoke here. Yes? That's the third step. Listen, this is just the second step. It's simply stating your reason without applying it to the specific situation. What's your reason for saying there is fire? My reason is smoke. That's all. And then you make it more specific in the later steps. Because of smoke. Or because I see smoke. Vakni Duma Darshanat. Because of seeing smoke. You see, seeing smoke is a matter of pratyaksha. Anuman means you take pratyaksha and carry it further than it can go by itself. You start with pratyaksha. What is my sign? What is my evidence for presuming, logically, that there is fire? My evidence is the visible presence of smoke, which is known by pratyaksha. Yes? No, reason. The reason is an evidence, but that's okay, but it's called Hetu. What's your reason for saying there's fire? My reason is seeing smoke. What's the third step? Meaning. What kind of example? Okay, what examples do you give in this case? What? Okay, that Could you make that more full and explicit? What like the kitchen?
The kitchen is full of smoke. It means it's fire or something like that.
Okay, and what about the lake?
The middle of the lake, there's no... cannot be fire, therefore there cannot be smoke.
Okay. What's the fourth step? I didn't hear it. I'm sorry. Application. What kind of application? Yeah, apply acetyl pain balm? No, sorry. Application of? That's the general rule. What's the application? The application is, here there's smoke. There's smoke here. That's the application. You know, yes. Here. There must be fire here because there's smoke here. That's the application. No. You gave me two steps. That's the last step also. The fourth step is... What? Well, the because part is the fourth step. The therefore part is the fifth step. Therefore, there's fire here. That's the last step. Conclusion. Okay. We didn't finish. We did. Okay. We did finish. And we continue. Now you can look at your computers. Tad shabde naiva badamulam yata. Are shita tura patika. Masmin dumad vatni sambhavanam kridvam drishnam asma bir atrasau vishjanunaiva nirvana ha kintu amutraiva dumod garini gadao drishyate vanihi ityadao. I'll translate that much. Logical inference is given firm roots only by verbal testimony. Now we're showing that Anuman is dependent. Of course, it was dependent on Pratyaksha because you have to see. Your Hetu has to be seen, observed. Anuman just extends Pratyaksha, but without Pratyaksha, Anuman can't go anywhere, can't even start. And also, Anuman... to be made solid, to be given firm roots, bada mulam, it requires verbal testimony. As for example, in such a statement as, here's an authority speaking, the forest ranger who's an authority on what goes on the mountains. Oh, travelers, disturbed by the cold, don't presume that you can find fire here just because you see smoke. He's modifying the Anuman. We have seen that rainfall just extinguished this fire. But you can find fire over there on that hill from which smoke is rising. Another hill over there. There you'll find fire. And here... another example, or a similar example. Here there is but a false appearance of smoke. Smoke without fire. The real fire is over there. The only thing is, it sounds like the same thing. Okay, I'm going to make a comment in your file and then borrow the file later. Could you give me 30 seconds to write in a comment? Oh, Krishna, Krishna. Sorry. Having a hard time with this mouse. Okay. Okay. Continuing. Any questions? No, no. Hold on. Hold your questions. I'll continue. Duma basa evayam natu vatnihi. Oh, I did that. Okay. Yadi vaktavyam eva mabasa tvena purvatra surup asido hetur ityato nasadunumano vyabachadi teiti samanadi kara twat visha parvata bashba dishu netra dvaladinam apidarshanat alam dumadinam Asarvatrikatwat Tadbash Patita Kala Gata Duma Jata Twadi Sambhavacha Naduma Duma Basayur Agni Sadbhava Sadbhava Matra Patipater Agni Gyanad Eva Duma Gyani Sadhya Sadhana Samabhivyaharat Paraspara Ashrayak Prasajyate. Here we get into some fussy details of Nyaya, and they'll have to be explained in the commentary, but I'll read the translation first. Someone may say, okay, we've said this Anuman is not independent. It can be modified or overruled by Shabda Brahman. And it requires... often needs the support of Shabda Brahman to make it definite. There may be doubt if you don't have verification from Shabda Brahman. Okay, now someone may raise an objection that we've done an unfair analysis. Someone may say, because the smoke was only a semblance of the real thing, the reason for the inference was already invalid by the fault called Swarupa Asiddhi. And so there was no deviation from the principle of valid inference. After all, there is a similarity between real and false smoke, as we see when one's eyes burn from the vapor of a poisonous hill. What's a Vishuparvata? Poison hill. What's going on in a poison hill? I guess there's some foul plant life on it. Okay. Stings your eyes. What? I don't know if it's a volcano. Yeah, or some sulfur coming out of the ground or something. Yeah, something stinky. Let's go on, and we'll try to get some explanation to that. What's going on here? Let me just read the translation first. Should I read that again? Someone may say, because the smoke was only a semblance of the real thing, that smoke on the mountain where there wasn't really any, that smoke where the fire had already been extinguished, was only a semblance of the real thing, or the smoke on the foggy mountain. It looks like smoke, but it's just fog. Because the smoke was only a semblance of the real thing, the reason for the inference was already invalid by the fault called Swarupa Asiddhi. See, the reason, the hetu, there's something wrong with the hetu. Therefore, the whole argument breaks down. You have a faulty hetu, then the argument is faulty. And there are different kinds of faults of a hetu. Hetu abasa, shadow of a hetu. Faulty hetus, and there are several different kinds. One of them is called Swarupa Asiddhi. And there's some explanation of that in the commentary. And so there was no deviation from the principle of valid inference. Nothing wrong with the process of Anuman, just you use a lousy hetu. This is the Purvapaksha. So, see, we're arguing that Anuman is not perfect. The proponent of Anuman is saying, no, nothing wrong with Anuman. Anuman's perfect, it's just you misapplied it. You used a bad hetu. After all, there is similarity between real and false smoke. Hmm. Well, that means you have the real hetu, real smoke, which is a sign of real fire, and then you have apparent smoke, which isn't really smoke, and therefore there's no real fire. But they both burn your eyes. The sulfur coming off the stinky mountain is also burning your eyes, but it's not real smoke. Okay, in response we say, yes, because smoke and so on are not actually present everywhere they seem, and because real smoke may possibly also arise the moment vapor has arrived from a hill, or because some other strange phenomena may occur, we cannot ascertain for sure whether the smoke, which may be real or false, indicates the presence or absence of fire. And if we must base our knowledge of smoke on the knowledge of fire, you know, how do you know it's real smoke? Well, if there's real fire, then it's real smoke. But we're using the smoke to prove the fire, and now we're going to use the fire to prove the smoke. We are left with a vicious cycle of mutually dependent premises. You need to know the smoke to prove the fire, but to know that it's real smoke, you have to know that it's real fire. So they're both proving each other backwards and forwards. That's a vicious cycle of mutual dependent premises, or paraspara ashraya. They're each the shelter of the other. Each one is needed to prove the other one. In other words, the proof and what needs to be proven become mixed up. So that's our response to the Purvapaksha. Here's an explanation of some of this in the commentary. In the Nyaya system, it is impossible to prove that something is absolutely certain, because the hetu is never absolutely certain. The hetu is what? The reason. Like the smoke is the reason for the for knowing the fire. But at least one can identify the flaws in a faulty deduction. Like you can never prove for sure that a deduction is right, but it's relatively easy to prove what if a faulty to point out the faults in a faulty deduction. So that's what they usually get involved in attacking faulty logic. Because you're never going to know for sure, but at least you can tell when someone's made a real mistake. The logicians in Gotama's line have therefore developed an elaborate theory of hetu abhasa, faulty reasoning. Hetu abhasa, shadow of a hetu. One type of faulty reason is called svarupa asiddha, svarupa asiddha. The svarupa is asiddha. That means the reason doesn't exist at all. You know, the problem, the reason why your reason doesn't prove what you want to prove, because the reason isn't true. Meaning that the reason is false, simply because it isn't present within the considered circumstances. Okay, there's some smoke somewhere, but you're trying to prove about what's going on now on this mountain, and there's no real smoke here. So you can't give smoke as a reason. It's svarupa asiddha. The reason itself isn't true, not here and now. That's svarupa asiddha. You cite a reason that isn't true in your circumstance. In other words, the axiom, wherever there is smoke, there is fire, does not apply in a place devoid of smoke. If the supposed smoke one sees is actually a poisonous vapor arising from the mountain, the inference of fire becomes faulty by svarupa asiddha hetu abhasa. Svarupa asiddha hetu abhasa. Ah, mistake. No, it's okay. Hetu abhasa doesn't have to be hyphenated. Not there. Okay. That's the Purvapaksha saying there's nothing wrong with anuman, but you're using a faulty reason here. That's the problem. Anuman is perfect, but you're not using it right. Another fault in the process of inference is paraspara ashraya, mutual dependence between proof and what is meant to be proved. An example of this faulty reasoning occurs When one can verify a suspicious variety of smoke only by confirming the presence of fire. A proponent of logic might assert that logic is reliable, but that using the presence of smoke to argue for the presence of fire when we don't know whether the smoke is real would amount to misapplying logic. In response, it may be asked, then how do we tell whether the smoke is real? If one answers that one has to tell by knowing that it comes from a genuine fire, one would fall into the logical fault of mutual dependence, paraspara ashrayaha, that is, circular reasoning. You need A to prove B, and you need B to prove A. Okay, any comments, questions at this point? Okay, but Vishnukanta was first.
So in this case, the smoke itself was a wrong basis, because based on that reason, we furthered the argument and so everything got collapsed. Is it so?
What's wrong about it?
Because we don't know whether it's uncertain. We don't know whether it's real or true.
Uncertain is another, anaikantika is another Hetu Abhas. But we identified this one as Swarupa Siddha. Yeah, you could say anaikantika, it's not always true. But we're saying it's not true at all. There is no smoke. Anaikantika would be claiming that wherever there's wherever there's Santa Claus, there's fire. Well, sometimes Santa Claus is standing by a fire and sometimes there's no fire around him. So it's not always true that wherever Santa Claus is present, there is fire. That's anaikantika. Not exclusively true. But this is a case of something else, Swarupa Siddha. It's not true at all. You say, because there's fire, because there's smoke, but there is no smoke here. So it's that particular kind of faulty reason. Not doubt, but actually not being true. Doubt means when you don't know if it's true or false. Here we know it's false, or it is false. It's not a matter of doubt, it's a matter of being wrong. Saying a wrong thing and doubting are two different things. When you say, I don't know, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, you're doubting. When you say, it's this, and you're wrong about it, that's actual fault.
So we are saying it is wrong.
Fallacy.
We are saying it is wrong based on the verbal testimony that one person came and told that this is not a fire, but this is a... This is just a smoke after the rain had extinguished.
Okay, well that's
so based on that we say this is a false.
Well, that's the correction of the faulty logic, coming from Shabda Praman, from authority, from the forest ranger, or Smokey the Bear, comes and says, "You're not Americans. There's no Americans here." This bear that says don't throw your cigarettes in the fire in the forest and don't start forest fires. Anyway.
But the question is, there can be other places where the Hetu can be true also. So at that time, the logic might work out well. It might
be valid. See, the logic is not... Yeah, it's not true in this situation. It could be true in another situation. There is smoke somewhere, but you're citing smoke here where there isn't any smoke. It's not that the reason... The reason is misapplied to a situation where it's not true.
But if it is applied in the proper place, then the logic might hold true.
Might
be valid.
It will, yes, it can be valid in the right situation. We're not arguing, Jiva Goswami and no one else is arguing that Anuman is completely invalid, useless. It's just fallible. You can get into situations where it fails. Not that it fails all the time. And it can be corrected. It can be, saved from its failure by Shabda Praman. Okay, I'm skipping Bart Ram. We'll come back to him. You're done, okay.
Could you give another example of circular reasoning, just to understand it more clearly?
Well, I give a different kind of circular reasoning. Suppose you say that, why do you say this? There's a supreme lord who's the shelter? You have the adibhautic, adiatmic, and adidaivic persons. The body, which is the adibhautic, like the eyeball, the sense organ, is adibhautic. The soul who sees through that eye is the adiatmic, and then there's the demigods. They're all dependent on each other. Why not let them all be the shelter? What do you need a supreme lord for to be the shelter? Problem is that they're mutually dependent shelters. Each one of them to be a shelter, to support the others has to be supported itself. That's mutual. That's not a logical. That's a causal in causation of mutual dependence. Something is, you know, the living entity is the cause of perception, but he's not independently. He depends on the eyeball and on the demigod, and the demigod also depends on the eyeball and the human being. If there's no human beings to control, then the demigods are out of work, and they're not demigods anymore because there's no demigod work, and they just become ordinary living entities again. So to be a demigod, you're dependent on the eyeballs and on living entities. That's mutual independent. That's causal mutual dependence. You want an example of logical. Problem is, the logicians always give the same examples. They don't come up. There's not a big repertory of examples. The smoke and the fire is there. All yeah, it's the constant example.
Once, I heard, I think Jadvait Maharaj told that secular reasoning is when we present a conclusion as one of the premises.
Yeah.
He defined it like that.
In other words, the conclusion itself needs to be proved. But especially when, well, that's not necessarily circular. That's an unproven reason. But circular when the premise can be proven, but it can only be proven by the conclusion. And the conclusion is only proven by the premise. They prove it, they're needed to prove each other. Then it goes around in a circle.
So it's when the premise is to be proven by a conclusion. That's
the only thing that can prove the premise, well, the conclusion, the whole thing is set up to prove the conclusion based on the premise. But then you find out you can only be certain of the premise on the evidence of the conclusion. Then it's going around in a circle.
It's clear.
If you want an example, I had to think about it because there's not a big stock of ready examples. Yes.
There was one funny example there are two statements, and the statement above says that the statement below is wrong, and the lower statement says that the statement above is right.
Yeah.
And then you get into a...
Yeah, that is absurd. They can't... Neither one can be true. That's a silly syllogism.
I don't know,
but that is an example, yeah.
It happens oftentimes among... It used to happen, actually, oftentimes among devotees of particular spiritual organizations. They say, I know such and such Maharaj is a pure devotee because he manifests symptoms of bhava. But how do you know that he manifests the symptoms of bhava? Because he's a pure devotee. You know, that's why. Or he's a Mahabhagavata because such and such. You know. How do you know he's Mahabhagavata? Because he manifests pure...
That doesn't work as an inference. What you have to do is just believe it, that he's a pure devotee. It has to be taken as a matter of faith. Yes.
A question about is it true to say, is it correct to say that we can only meaningfully call Anumana as an absolute pramana only if first our sense perception is absolutely perfect, and secondly our power to draw conclusions from what we perceive is also absolutely perfect. In other words, for instance, just the example with the fire and the smoke, in order to make a meaningful claim about if there is a fire, when we see the smoke, we should have a universal knowledge about all smokes and all fires and how they connect to one another.
Well, in that case, only God can do that.
Right. So, in other words, anumana
or
is
a liberated soul knows his limitations, and therefore he won't jump to bad conclusions. So an liberated soul, by steering around bad, avoiding bad, situations where you can't prove it, and using some other means like Shabda Praman, when he can't prove it by logic, he can apply logic appropriately, a liberated soul, infallibly. But only God can absolutely know any hetu to be true.
That's an argument against anumana as being absolute pramana.
Yeah, anumana in the hands of infallible souls is going to be infallible.
Right.
In the hands of fallible souls will be fallible.
Like, as an example, actually, Badrinarayana Prabhu, he once in a Srimad Bhagavatam class in Mayapur pulled out a whole stack of newspaper articles, and he just read the headings of them, and scientific articles, and one of the headings said that our knowledge, the age of the universe changes as our knowledge about it expands. It's a very absurd statement, because the age of the universe doesn't change. We get to know much.
I think that's just a sarcastic statement.
No, actually, they were.
They're really
sincere,
believing that.
Really? Yeah, that's what they say.
Okay.
I understand. In other words, they just study little part of this universe, but they extrapolate the causal relations found in this particular tiny part of the universe all over the place. But they have no premises for doing that, no basis.
Well, by the time you're done speculating, the universe is getting old. Yes.
In the hands of not infallible people is fallible. Close. Is fallible. Like once I remember you were speaking in a lecture, you said that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And then the living entities are his servants. So then we should deduce that we are supposed to serve him. But there are many people who can accept that Krishna is the Supreme Lord.
There are many people who cannot accept that Krishna is the Supreme Lord.
No, who can accept that? Who can accept that Krishna is the Supreme Lord? Who can accept that we are his servants? But
yes.
Then they don't infer that we have to serve him.
Well, that's illogical. No?
Yeah, but it happens.
That's a refusal to apply simple logic.
But it happens.
Yeah. There's this intentional blindness.
So in the case of this verbal testimony, when one tells that it may be not fire as a cause of this smoke, but it may be some geyser or some post smoke after rain. So this verbal testimony also based on pratyaksha, somebody who saw this event. So this can solve. So and we can try to collect all this pratyaksha, all this testimony, which you already saw, and try to make like a very complicated argument. That we have a smoke because of this, of this, of this, and then we can try to ascertain by using also pratyaksha that it was just rain, just
yes, you could add conditions to refine your argument.
Yeah.
But still won't make it perfect. It just makes it more complicated.
Yes, but
you may get closer to the truth by making your argument more refined and more complicated, yes.
But
and usually they have to do that to some extent to prove anything.
Yes.
But it doesn't prove anything, absolutely.
But at the same time, we tell that it depends of shabda, of verbal testimony, but the verbal testimony itself, it depends of pratyaksha and logic. So, or we have to have some absolute pratyaksha, some absolute shabda in this case, like from somebody who really sees this.
Yes. So shabda praman is called the most effective means because it doesn't get unnecessarily complicated. It's a straightforward, simple means. You just accept what the authority says. There may be some complication in properly understanding what the authority told you in interpreting it. But otherwise, it's much more simpler than But Yaksha, in which you're going to have to gather masses of empirical data before you can be certain about anywhere sure about anything. You have to collect heaps of data. Or Anuman, where you have to modify your arguments and go and argue back and forth. It's simpler just to accept the statement of authority and then have someone else explain to you what he said.
And even if he try to collect all possible hetus or all possible causes of this event, and we can try to think very, but we can miss some particular one which is a real one, and we can come to the wrong conclusion.
The real world is so complicated and interwoven everything with everything else that you can never find all the hetus. Mm. You know, what's the cause of the hurricane, you know, that hit Florida last week? You can list so many causes, and then you find there's another cause. There's a sparrow, you know, who burped in Tahiti 3 weeks ago, and that's also one of the causes of the hurricane. But you know, how can you find all those causes?
And we can come on to the wrong conclusion. We can take something particular as a cause, but actually it can be not. No, not true. It can be someone else.
Yeah, you can find. You can be. Yeah. You can. Yes, you can. You can pick out causes that aren't really causes. Mm. Yes. Okay. Let's move on. Next section. Tadevam tadrisha pratyakshaiva pramam prati prati vavichare samavyaptau api tadvyabhicharaha. Okay. We were describing how there's problems in the logical process itself. You can have faulty reasoning, faulty hetus. Beside that, let's see if I got this translation right. Thus, since evidence gleaned from sensory perception also fails, as described above, to provide reliable knowledge, inference may deviate even when free from formal irregularities. In other words, your hetus may be fine, your assumptions may be reasonable, and your general rule may be basically right, but the perception that your premises is based on may be wrong. Your projection in the first place may have been wrong. You thought you saw something, it wasn't that, it was something else. Nothing wrong with the logic, but your projection that the logic is standing on may be wrong. So even a samavyapti, perfectly balanced logical argument, it still may fail because the premises in it that are based on sense perception may be based on faulty sense perception. Yeah, you thought you saw smoke on the mountain, but actually someone put LSD in your coffee. Yeah, and you were seeing something that wasn't there. Okay, now we continue. Now we're arguing now in relationship to Anuman. How Shabda is superior to Anuman. Before we were talking how Shabda is superior to Pratyaksha. So in relationship to Anuman, shabdasya nairapeksham yata dashamas tvamasi ityadaveva atma shaktyana rupam eva cha tasya tena satyavyakaranam yata hidaka guna vishesham adrishtavadbi partavatvena sarvam eva ashmadikam dravyam lauhachedyam ityanumatum shakyate natu shruta tadrisha gunakam tachijam ityadau. That verbal knowledge does not depend on inference is demonstrated in such statements as you are the tenth. That statement was brought up before in relationship to Pratyaksha. But it also shows that the verbal statement, you are the tenth, the guru's authoritative statement, you're the tenth person, doesn't depend on any inference. You don't have to. You don't have to not depend on prajaksha or anuman. Inference can assist verbal knowledge, but only in ways limited by the competence of the persons who use it. For example, those who have not observed the special qualities of a diamond may reason that all stones and other objects can be cut by iron because they are products of the element earth. But those who hear about the qualities of diamond understand that iron cannot cut it because diamonds are harder than iron. But people who don't know that may reason that iron can cut anything. Commentary. Apart from the formal difficulties in assuring that the reasons supporting an inference are valid, the authority of anuman itself has yet another limitation. Such an inference must always begin with premises derived originally from direct perception. And so, because direct sensory perception is never absolutely certain, knowledge derived from logic is also imperfect. Okay. Continuing, again, how shabda is superior to logic. Shabdasya tad upamardikatvam yata. Yata vagnitaptam angam vagnitapena shamyati. Shuntyadi dravyam jataragni pakadau madhuryadi bhag bhavati ityadau tena pratipadite numanin avirodhyatvam yata ekaiveyam oshadis tridoshakni ityadau tat shaktibir aspishyer te shabdasyaiva sadaka tamatvam yata Grahacheshtadav eveti. Tadevam mukyur evatayur abhasikritau. Parani tu swayam ev anapekshiani bhavanti. Tasya tayos chanugatatvat. Verbal knowledge can overrule inference. As shown in the example, a limb burned by fire is cured by being burned by fire. You know, you get a serious burn and they cauterize it. They cauterize the wound, which means they apply a burning piece of metal or something to stop the flow of blood or whatever they do it. But a burn can be cured by further burning. That is against perception, but the authoritative knowers of medical science give us that opinion. And substances like ginger assume qualities like sweetness when cooked in the fire of digestion. A fact established by verbal knowledge, ginger is pungent. It's hot and pungent? Anyway, it's hot. But when it goes into the stomach and gets digested, it turns into sweet taste. We don't perceive that when we're chewing the ginger, and we don't have taste buds in our stomach. But Ayurveda tells us that. A fact established by verbal knowledge cannot be countered by inference. Okay, and the verbal knowledge can counteract the inference. Shabda can overrule anuman, but not the other way around. Anuman can never overrule shabda, not perfect shabda. This is shown, for example, by the statement, this single herb eliminates the imbalance of the three humors. So the authoritative Ayurveda says that. No logical argument can disprove it. Continuing. Verbal knowledge is most effective. That means it's the quickest way, simplest way. In understanding a subject, that cannot be touched by the powers of influence. For example, the influence of the planets. It's the movement of the planets, not the influence. Okay. Anyway, I have a question to myself. It wasn't a settled thing. I wasn't sure whether it was influence or movement. It's really movement. When the two other principal means of knowing, inference and sense perception, are thus reduced to shadow-like subordinates, surely all the other means of knowing become insignificant. We haven't looked at the other ones yet, since they all follow from verbal knowledge and these other two. In other words, there are three major pramanas. The other pramanas are all derived from the first three. So if pratyaksha and anumana are shown to be fault or dependent, at least, and faulty, then all the other pramanas after the first three are also going to be dependent and faulty, because they're all based on combinations of pratyaksha, anumana, and shabda. Okay, this is a good place to stop. Any comments?
In the translation, I have the principal means. I think it's supposed to be principal, P-A-L. Is it corrected in the later
version? I think
version?
That's the adjective, yeah. Principal, L-E is a noun.
P-A-L.
But principal means mukya.
I mean, here I have principal, the noun. Is it corrected in the later version?
I have two other principal means.
Principal, P-A-L.
L-E, you mean?
P-A-L. At the end.
E-A-L.
Principal.
Anyway, I think you have an older copy.
The wrong copy.
It's been corrected.
Okay, it's been corrected.
Yeah.
Yes. We saw that the verbal testimony has two folds, that one is by the wise and by one is by the non-wise. Verbal testimony by the wise and by the non-wise. We saw these two as the two divisions of the shabda, right?
Oh, by the wise and non-wise, yes.
So,
No, we were talking about pratyaksha. We haven't, I don't think we've subdivided. Oh, did we talk about? Oh, yeah, okay, but, yes. But that was the wise and not wise. That particular qualification was about pratyaksha. We do have different kinds of shabda. We have, you know, reliable authorities. We have relatively reliable authorities, and we have absolutely reliable authority. But we haven't discussed that yet. That hasn't been discussed.
But in this example, a person comes to that forest officer. He comes and says that.
Yeah, he's yes.
He's he says that I've seen there. It is not actually a fire. It is a smoke due to a fire being extinguished by rain. Some reason he gives, and he says there is a fire. So in that case, he is actually he's a perception. It's an example of perception by the wise, right? No?
Well, shabda is yes.
He's a wise person, and he is perceived. He's an authority on that, and
yeah,
he's
based on his wise. But no, he's not really a wise person. Not according to our definition of wise person. He's competent within his field. That's not what we mean by wise. Wise, we mean not subject to the four faults. So he's subject to four faults, but he doesn't let them. He'll lose his job if he lets those four faults, you know, have him make a wrong decision about forest matters. So he has to be an expert on the forest, but so he's only relatively reliable within his own field.
So it's still uncertain, because even he might have committed faults, and what is the?
Yeah, it's just an example, Even shabda is fallible when it's practiced by fallible people. When fallible people are giving their opinions, they can fail. They can have wrong opinions. So we really are going to focus on perfect shabda, the shabda of the Vedas. That's where we're aiming at, but we haven't gotten there yet.
But
we haven't discussed that yet. We're aiming at that.
But the shabda of the Vedas is revealed by the shabda of the fallible people. Is it
Mm-mm. First of all, they're infallible people who present the Vedas, liberated souls. We are dependent on them first, the great rishis who are liberated. We have our access to the Vedas primarily through them.
It's our access.
Now,
that,
you know, if you don't have direct access to an infallible soul, you're going to have to find out what the infallible soul said from a fallible soul. That you may be in that situation.
So it is our axiom that...
But we also have the books. We have the books also, the Shastras. You know, if the Shastra is reliable, then you can verify the fallible soul, what he told you about, what the infallible soul said. You can verify it by seeing it in the book too.
So those rishis who revealed, they are infallible, is our axiom. That is our axiom.
What is?
The rishis who revealed the shabda are infallible. That is our axiom. Is it?
Yeah. Shruti, what is considered Shruti is supposed to be infallible. Even though there are rishis involved, they have to be perfect rishis. Otherwise, they're not fit to reveal Shruti. And so considered Shruti should be infallible. Otherwise, it's Smriti. It's a lower category. That's the difference. When the infallible person conveys the eternal Vedas, that's Shruti. When someone else gets involved, it's just his version. And it may be right and may be wrong to some extent. That's Smriti. Yes.
Because we base it so much on the perfection of the rishis who perceive. But there are rishis for some mantras who are not so perfect all the time. If you like, the Indra is rishi for some mantras, and
yes.
Indra, I don't know, at least he's not featured as a very great person.
Even to tell who's the real rishi, we need further guidance. Guru Shastra Sadhu. We have the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavatam, we're told who's a real rishi, like Narada, Vyas, Brahma. These are real rishis. Shukadev, Maitreya. These are the rishis that we accept. And other rishis can be accepted if they agree with these ones. We take Bhagavatam as our primary authority. Our rishis follow the Bhagavatam anyway. Otherwise, you may be following some other school of thought. You may be a proponent of Sankhya philosophy taught by the atheist Kapila, and he's your rishi. And he says wrong things. He says that Prakriti is the independent cause of creation. And if you listen to him, you'll get the wrong idea. But if you listen to Vyasadeva speaking in the Bhagavatam, you won't get that wrong idea.
Yeah, but these mantras which are perceived by Indra and all these rishis, by Indra, even those mantras are accepted as part of the Samhita, of the
yes.
proper texts.
Yes, but verified by Vyasadeva.
Yeah.
The editor has verified. Just like, you know, you write a book and your editor catches your mistakes. And then after it's been to the hands of the editor, then it's publishable. So Vyasadeva is the editor of the Vedas. It's all verified by him.
So do we understand that when they perceive Indra and others, other rishis who are fallible, at least in comparison to Vyasadeva?
Even if they were, if Vyasadeva says the mantra is good, then it's good. Even if it was perceived in the meditation of someone who's not fallible, infallible. But Vyasadeva's infallible and he's verified it.
So when these rishis perceived them, they went to some state of perfection and perceived, and then they came back from the state of perfection, but they are...
They went into a trance. I don't know. You're going to talk about being temporarily perfect. Perfect should be eternally perfect.
Was offering Guhya, Hamsa Guhya prayers. Then he actually described perfect philosophy and those prayers could be quoted as standard. Even Hiranyakashipu sometimes speaks very meaningful words in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
He speaks perfect philosophy, but when he stops speaking, he does start
acting. But then misapplied it.
Yeah, he cannot apply it. And then when Vishnu revealed himself to Dakshin, he told him, I'm very happy with your prayers. They're all correct and perfect, but you are in Maya. And you will be in Maya forever.
Yes.
More or less.
And on that principle, we can go out and preach.
Yes.
We're imperfect, but we can repeat. If we're careful, we can repeat what's perfect.
That's what Prabhupada many times, even in his commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam, said, quoted or gave as a principle of perfection. He said, as long as you follow a perfect person, you're liberated. As soon as you stop following, then you're off.
As soon as you start speculating.
Yes.
Okay, we'll stop on that note. Okay. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.